Welcome to Fantasy Feud, a pitcherless baseball podcast where we're tackling the most relevant debates in fantasy baseball each week. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Shelley Verstraete, to talk through both sides of the hottest fantasy baseball debates right now. Baseball is back. We're trying to make decisions about who should be on our roster, and we want to be deliberate about those decisions, taking in the information that we have. We're right in that sweet spot of week four. We've had some games. We've got some data. But you don't want to make roster decisions too soon or too slowly. Shelley, how are things going for you and your teams this week?
I don't know. It's a little bit of like feast and famine. I mean, I have some teams that are like really good, like my main events and my RotoWire OC are in the top three, which are pretty good. But then I go over to like Tout Wars. I am an absolute last. I've never been an absolute last before. Like I'm down, like I'm last, but like 10 points below like the next person. Like I've never been this low before. So it's been an interesting ride so far.
It has been an interesting ride. I am also struggling in Tout Wars. I think I climbed out of the basement, and the last time I checked, I was like hovering between 7th and 10th. But if you recall, Tout Wars is where I took Spencer Strider 1-2 overall, second pick overall. So my second pitcher in that league is Justin Steele. My SP2 was Justin Steele. And so I've lost my SP1 and my SP2. I am lucky I'm hanging on in Tout at all at this point, considering how much I invested in pitching that has gone nowhere. I also have Francisco Lindor on that team. Like, buddy, we got to start hitting. And I'm not worried about Francisco Lindor. He is not a guy you're dropping, but also like this has been real hard to watch. We're going to talk through all of it. We're going to debate all of it. We've got some guys who are surging, guys who are really doing a lot more than we thought they would do on draft day. Some guys who are struggling. Are we going to cut them or not? Some guys who have role questions that we're going to hash it all out with today's guests. We're really excited to welcome one of Shelley's league mates from DARF, Lauren Auerbach, to the show. You know Lauren as a senior writer at Fantrax. We know her as one of our favorite people to hang out with at First Pitch Arizona. And if you've never been to First Pitch Arizona, what are you even doing? Come hang out with us in November. Welcome to the show. How's it going, Lauren?
Hey, guys. It's great to see you. It's going well. And I want to say, you know, thank you for inviting me on here. I think this is a fantastic show. It's a really unique concept. You guys are doing a really great job, and I am happy to be a part of it. And it's really great to see both of y'all. Like you said, I feel like we are one Jenny Butler short of, you know, the majority of ladies at First Pitch Arizona. And so it's really good to see you guys kind of in a different context.
We are one Jenny Butler short of First Pitch, the ladies of First Pitch Arizona party. We should definitely do that show later this season. We should do a ladies' night debate show. And that's going to happen. So, Lauren, we'll find some times on your schedule for later. I'll reach out to Jenny. Well, and also, Jenny's in GLARF with me. So it can be like the ladies of Earth, the ladies of FPAS, the ladies in fantasy. Yes. This is also, I believe, our first all-women show. So that's kind of fun. Yeah. And I'm very excited for that. I think that we're still going to hash it out, though, debate style, because that's what we do here. Rules of the road for anyone who's new. This is a debate podcast, so we have speech times and we have rules. Throughout the debate, the moderator will shift. We've sort of assigned who's going to moderate the different questions. Each debater gets 3 minutes to make their case. There is a question and answer period between there, which we've sort of set the clock at 2 minutes on, but sometimes it goes over or under depending on which questions we need to answer. And then each debater gets a 1 minute rebuttal to respond to the arguments that have been made and sort of close up their case. And we're just going to jump right into it. And Lauren, our guest, is going to moderate this first debate where we're talking about, you know, just the concept of the show, decision time, who's droppable, everyone, only some guys. How are you doing it? Lauren, I'll let you lead us into this first debate.
Yeah, I mean, you reference it at the top of the show. This is where kind of all these stats start, you know, we're getting larger sample sizes and kind of like, what are we doing with some of these players that, I don't know, we don't know what to do with. So I pose this question to you. You know, we're on to week four. It's decision time. Who is droppable right now? Is it everyone? Is it only really injured top picks? Is it guys after, you know, round 15? Or is it something else altogether? What is it? Sarah, I will start with you.
So I have a handful of guys that I'm definitely going to wait until at least Memorial Day to see. If you were one of my top five picks, in all likelihood, unless there's a catastrophic injury, and rest in peace, my Tout Wars team, where Spencer Strider was that catastrophic injury, I'm not dropping it. Like, I'm going to hold and just try to see what we can do and hope you figure it out. Francisco Lindor, I'm looking at you. But for those first five picks, I'm going to ride or die until the end. And then there's this range of guys in the 5 to 15 pick round where it really depends on how in to the guy I was or how much I believed in them. So for example, I like to go to the NFC and look at my most rostered players. And I have a handful who are really working out well for me this season. Christopher Morel is a guy who is one of my most rostered guys that looks like he's starting to figure it out defensively, and the power stroke is real. He's only striking out like 17% of the time right now. People, like, the last thing Christopher Morel had to figure out at the plate was how to not strike out 30% of the time. And he seems to be doing it, which is incredible to see. I'm not dropping Christopher Morel under any circumstances. He could have a little cold streak here and I'd be okay with it. Similarly, Tyler O'Neill is one of my most rostered players. He's one of those middle round guys. Nobody should be dropping Tyler O'Neill at the moment. He's tied for the major league lead in homers. And we all know that the Cardinals suck at valuing their outfielders. So this is probably just Boston's gain. And I'm looking forward to when Tyler O'Neill wins the ALCS MVP sometime into the future. But there are some guys in that range that I would drop right now. Chris Bryant is somebody that you probably picked up in the middle rounds. He's already got back pain issues again. He's not doing well, and he's not doing well hitting in Colorado. That is a guy that I consider droppable right now, even if you got him in like the 9th round or the 11th round or the 12th round or something around there. I think these mid-range guys are the guys where we can have some discussions about whether they're droppable. And I apologize in advance to anyone I picked up after round 15, but if I picked you up after round 15, I picked you up knowing I could drop you without feeling guilty about it. So, you know, perform or welcome to the waiver wire, and we're gonna try this out with somebody else.
Shelley, how about you? Who's in your drop zone?
Jeez, man, Sarah is ruthless. That's all I gotta say. I'm a little bit more of a just trust your off-season prep, just trust your process. Like I said, like, some of my teams are going well, but like, my Tout Wars league is absolutely dreadful. I mean, I drafted Francisco Lindor second. I drafted Devin Williams, you know, I put him on my IL, and, you know, there's just been a whole lot of like underperformers. And I don't think that the underperformers, at least on my team so far, and most of the guys that are quote unquote your guys, if they're underperforming, I don't think that they're going to be underperforming to this level, you know, for the entire season. Like, you have to trust your process, just trust your guys. It's going to be hard. Like, my Tout Wars, I'm just like, do I even want to do Fab? Of course I did Fab. I will still do it, even though it might be like my last Fab that I do, because it's really disheartening to just go over to that standings and just see that you are in last and by like 15 points, which is like, how is that even possible? But it's like, you still got to grind it out. Just trust all the work that you did, and at least try to get to a respectable position. I don't expect to win Tout Wars this year because I'm so far down. However, I still will try to grind and work it out. Just try to get to a respectable position because, you know, just because. But it's just like, just trust everything that you know about some guys, because Francisco Lindor has been absolutely dreadful, but you can't drop him. Like, he's Frankie Lindor. Like, you can't do that. So just, you know, just trust the guys. They will work out. It's only been, what, 4 weeks? It's, how many weeks are in the season? Like, come on. Like, it's only been 4 weeks. Exactly. Okay. So it's fine. It's not great, but it's fine. They will work out. Like, they will have like those weeks where they have hit like 3 home runs, go, you know, hit, you know, 450 or something, and then like totally bump you up the standings. That's going to happen at some point, because we know some of these players aren't going to hit this poorly or pitch this poorly or whatever. The tides will turn.
Oh, am I doing something now? Oh.
As our moderator, you're going to keep the
I'm a really good moderator, ladies.
We're leaving this in, Lauren. Like, this is staying in. Because authentic, right? Like, this is how it rolls. But yeah, so we're going to move into the question and answer period right now. And Lauren, if you have questions for me or Shelly, you can start us off. Or if not, I have a question for Shelly.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I would ask, do you think that there is a difference in terms of, say, 15 team leagues and more shallower leagues, you know, your 10 and 12 leagues, in terms of who you're kind of, you know, keeping on the roster or not? Are you churning and burning more in the shallower leagues, or are you kind of keeping your same philosophy?
No, it's a really great point. And what I laid out above in terms of like the rounds where I'm picking guys and like how I sort of view their relative, it does change from a 15 teamer to a 12 teamer and especially to a 10 teamer for sure. A guy, for example, that I'm probably trying to hold on to in 15 teamers is DL Hall, who I believed in at the time. He's still starting for the Brewers. I don't love what I've seen so far. If I could replace him with someone who I believe is better, hello, Javier Assad, who we talked about last week, I would do it. But if I don't have an option like Javier Assad or I'm not getting that pickup on the waiver wire, I'm not going to drop DL Hall until I have someone who I believe is going to at least be able to take those innings and give me some win or save probability, right? In a 12-teamer or a 10-teamer, DL Hall, thank you, we tried. Like, we're done. he's not a guy that I'm gonna be that intent on sticking with throughout the entire season. But, and I also think the other thing that matters here a lot is your format context, right? So I'm playing in a handful of, most of my leagues are five category roto leagues, but I do have some different leagues, and add a new points league and some head-to-head categories leagues that are a little bit different. I also have, so Pitcherless does these leagues that are the wacky leagues, and I'm in one of those leagues called the Grand Theft League, where if you lose, it's a head-to-head categories league, but if you lose, someone can steal a guy from you and then you have to pick up new guys off the waiver wire. And so I keep losing, so I just had Aaron Savali stolen from me and I had to try to find a pitcher to replace Aaron Savali on the waiver wire. We're gonna see how that goes. So obviously, like, it's part of your team context too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Shelly, to your point, kind of being, I also tend to be a very, you know, trust your draft process kind of player. And I like to stick, for the most part, you know, with the guys that I drafted. Because I think, you know, now's the time where people can get like a lot of kind of itchy trigger fingers, right? And there are certain players, you know, I mean, it's this balance between looking at player performances and trying to understand, you know, are they sustainable or are they not? And also trusting your draft process, right? And I was just curious, Shelly, in any of your leagues, have you seen anyone that's had an itchy kind of trigger finger and there have been some good drops? Because now's the time also in the season, you know, also, you know, when you're looking at kind of the FAB results, like who is being dropped, because there's some people that have that itchy trigger finger. And sometimes there's some good stuff sitting on the waiver wire floor after those first couple of weeks. Oh, you're muted.
Sorry. Yeah. Surprisingly, in one of my 15 team leagues on NFBC, both Mason Miller and Colton Cowser were dropped the week before. And while I didn't get them because I didn't bid enough, they were still available. So, I mean, you still have like those managers that will drop anyone that they don't really think is beneficial, but you have to make sure that every week you go and look at your drops, like the people who drop players and pick up players, because even if, like, I have noticed, like, on, you know, the NFBC website, like if I sort by players, like I still miss players that were dropped, and I go and look at the, you know, people who picked up players in the following week, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know that guy was available. So it's a really good look to see who people dropped, because you might find some gems there.
That's a really good point on the drops. I actually, Bryce Terang was dropped the first period in my TGFBI league, and I did not wind up getting him. I actually I was going to only drop him if I got him for the right price, and I had Emmanuel Valdez on my team at that point in time, and I was like, it'll be fine. I can ride this Emmanuel Valdez hot start instead, but that kind of tapered off, and I wish I had put a little bit more down to pick up Bryce Terang there, but I was not particularly close. So yeah, definitely look at your drops and know the league rules there, right? Because one of the things that in Tout Wars in particular is really interesting, you can add guys without dropping. So you won't see it on the transaction report. People can drop people later to make their lineup legal before the first pitch. And so you have to look for those drops after the facts in some leagues and just know how your league operates. If people can have an illegal lineup for part of the time, if you're in a daily moves league and people are like moving around IL spots and those types of things, you might find guys on the waiver wire he just never expected to be there.
Yep.
So it's rebuttal time, right? So Sarah, what is your rebuttal to Shelley? Is this how this works?
Yeah. Okay. It's exactly how it works. That's okay. How we do things here. And Lauren, I just want to give you a shout out off the clock for 1 second. Uh-huh. You were the first person brave enough to moderate the first debate. Everyone else has let Shelley or I moderate one debate before they jump right in, and you're doing a killer job. So
well, you know, thank you for that. I was actually sitting and thinking like, God, why am I debating this first one? Like, because I should have had the question swapped.
It seems like moderating would be easier than debating, but actually, like debating, you know what you need to do. You're like, I'm going to say some stuff and somebody's going to move me along. So truly, you have done the bravest thing, and I appreciate you for it.
Well, thank you, Sarah.
For my rebuttal, look, I am, and people play in leagues with me know this, I'm not the most active person on the waiver wire early. Like, I do put my bids in to like replace guys who are injured or those types of things, because my gut instinct is generally where Shelley is. I do a lot of work in the off season to know the guys I want and to make sure that they're in the spots I want them in. And I'm not cutting bait on Sadon Rafaela, who I really believe in. If you've listened to earlier episodes of the show, you know, I really believe in Sadon Rafaela, even though he's gotten off to a kind of slow start in the regular season in Boston. But I do think there's a big difference. And I think it starts somewhere around round 6 or 7 in the guys that you have and why you drafted them and like when you cut bait on them or not. And I'll give you an example of a player who's near and dear to my heart. And I'm not telling people to drop this guy, but I might if I had him in a certain situation, given what I drafted him for. Nico Horner is not hitting leadoff for the Cubs. And that is creating a situation where he can't steal bases at the pace that he did last year, because he's the short side platoon leadoff hitter. And I don't know, man. Like, if you drafted Nico for 50 steals and he's not even giving you average right now, like, maybe you do need to go find someone else on the waiver wire to replace that bat, because the guy hitting 7th and not being able to steal 50 bags and he's not giving you a 280 average right now. Yeah, I know it sucks if you picked him up in round 6 or 8 and there are structural impediments to him getting to the numbers you thought you were going to get him to. And if those structural issues don't change quick, Pick up somebody else to replace him early. That's all I'm going to say.
I have on my little piece of paper here, Nico, written down, because this was a question that I was going to have, because you can have one of the things you can see. It's not about player performance. It's about team context, right? Like, he's clearly been, Council has him batting 7th. I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago and I was like, this is problematic, you know, if this is what they're going to, the Cubs are going to do, and this is what they're doing. And it's like, well, where does that leave you as a drafter for Nico Horner? I still kind of think like Ian Happ, you know, you've got no steals, you've got no home runs. The Cubs aren't running this season. And I think that if that continues, even though, you know, Happ is getting on base at a pretty, you know, healthy rate, if he's not stealing, I think that's also problematic, but that's completely different because he's at the top of the lineup. But yeah, I think that I'm really happy that you brought that, the Nico Horner example up. So good for you, Sarah. Shelley, what is your rebuttal?
My thing is just like, just trust your process. I mean, I have Nico Horner in a couple of leagues and yeah, I have him on my bench. Do I like it? No. Like, in my 12 team OC, I drafted him in the 5th round. I do not like having someone who I drafted on the fifth round on my bench. I still haven't dropped him. I'm thinking about it, but I'm not. It's just more of like, you don't want to make like super rash movements, especially with your top guys. In the shallower leagues, yeah, you can be a little bit more easy with that trigger finger. But in 15 team leagues, I mean, there's nothing on the wire. Like, seriously, there's nothing. So you just kind of sadly have to just ride it out and just trust your guys. As a Cubs fan, Sarah, and as a Nico manager, do you think that it's ever going to change? Like, I'm seriously curious.
You know, it's a great question. I I'm actually very stunned with two things that are going on with the Cubs right now. One is the Nico situation. He was so good in the leadoff spot for them last year. And a lot of what he was able to do with stealing bases stemmed from that, because he was like the first guy on base, and then he could put pressure on by running, right? Like, and he can't run if there's someone ahead of him. Like, if Dansby's ahead of him or Belly's ahead of him or whoever, like, he can't run. Like, so I do think that where he's hitting in the lineup is stifling his run game ability, which is a problem. But I'm also kind of stunned, and I'm actually in the middle of working on a piece right now that'll hopefully be out this week, possibly next week, depending on a couple of things I have going on personally, about the Cubs and the running game, because I did not expect them to not run. I mean, if you listen to any analysis that I did in the offseason, or you listen to anything on this show that I talk about with the Cubs, I thought the Cubs were going to run. They ran last year. The guys are still young. They have a lot of guys who can run. Council's been a guy who has run in the past. I don't understand why they're not running. And it's a very weird thing. So I will give people like a thing to look out for this weekend that is something I'm looking out for. The Cubs have always been very catcher dependent on when they run. Like, they run in fits and starts. They don't run against everybody. They run against the catchers that they think they can do the most damage on. And the Marlins have some of those catchers. So I'm really looking to see if the Cubs try to push the envelope Thursday through Sunday at Wrigley Field in this Marlins series. Because if they don't, I think they've made a decision as a team that they're just not going to run right now. And I hate that for Chicago because I think that makes them a worse team. I also hate that for every guy I drafted on the Cubs, thinking, I don't know, man, I thought Dansby was going to go back to like 20 steals Dansby. I thought that Hap had 15 to 20 steals in him. I thought Nico had 50 in him. Yep. And right now we're like at cricket. So it's bad.
Is bad.
Yeah, I think they have a team total of 2 steals and 6 attempts, which is also like, all of that is not good. The totals and the percentage there. So I don't know. Yeah. And I know you are, you know, Miss Cub fan. And so I was just very curious to see what you thought about that. So it's nice to hear those thoughts.
Unfortunately, they're thoughts that don't help any of us. We're all like, oh,
I know. Yeah.
I'm sure Saya getting injured doesn't make them more likely to run, right? They're probably likely to be more cautious when they have guys who are injured and they don't want anyone to get injured. Actually, I'm going to move us to debate number 3, and then we'll come back to debate number 2 because we're talking about the Cubs and I'm supposed to moderate debate number 3. So we'll just do that one and then we'll come back. We'll circle back. Michael Busch just tied the Cubs franchise record for home runs in consecutive games at 5. He has, I think, 6 on the season. I'm not going to lie. When the Cubs made this trade, I was a little bit stunned by it. Jackson Ferris is a pitcher in their system who, admittedly, very young, but I thought super highly of. So I was stunned to see them trade him. I was stunned to see them trade him for Michael Busch and Yency Almonte. He kind of looks like a capital D dude right now. Is Michael Busch a dude, or is he just a guy on a hot streak? And Lauren, we'll start with you.
I think Michael Busch is a dude. Like you said, he's homered in 5 straight. He is on fire right now. He's slashing .327, .410, .731. He's got a .404 ISO and a 1.141 OPS across 61 plate appearances. He's batting in the middle of that Cubs order. And he's also barreling the ball at a 22% clip. And he also has a 51.4% hard hit rate. So the power's there. The plate discipline is there. He's got plus contact rates. So I think that this is sustainable. I think that, you know, there will be some regression, but, you know, he came over from the Dodgers this season. And in 81 plate appearances last season with the Dodgers, one of the problems with him was that he couldn't hit fastballs. He had a .118 batting average against them. And what kind of impressed me most kind of digging through some of these numbers is that he has adjusted since he's come over to the Cubs. And now he has a .375 batting average against fastballs and is slugging at a 750% rate. So I'd like to see that adjustment. You know, baseball is about a game of adjustments. And with that comes solid contact rates, plate discipline metrics, the power's there. So I think that Busch is a dude. I think you will see some regression, but you know, it is worth noting that some of his expected stats confirm what he's doing. He has a 478 WOBA, and that's confirmed with a 487x WOBA. So I think that Bush is a dude. I like what we're seeing. He's one of the many surprises of the season, and I think he's legit.
Awesome. Shelley, what are your thoughts on Michael Bush? And is he a dude or just a guy on a hot streak? We should ride the hot streak while we can.
Yeah. As much as I am a fan of Michael Bush, I have him on a lot of dynasty leagues. I think this is really just a hot streak. Honestly, I like the trade this offseason for both sides. The Cubs got a first baseman that they kind of really needed. And the Dodgers kind of like replenished. Like they had Jackson Ferris and Zaheer Hope, who is hitting phenomenally in low A right now. So I think it was a good trade for both sides. But just going off this season, where did this power come from? We haven't really seen, like, he currently has like a 404 ISO. Obviously, that's not sustainable throughout his minor league career. Like, his highest ISO was like a 361. So obviously the power is going to come down a little bit. So I think that he is just honestly a guy on a hot streak. I love to see it. Like it's phenomenal. I want him to beat that Cubs record. I want him to just do awesome things. I've been a fan of his for years, you know, in the Dodgers system, just wanting him to come up, but the Dodgers never had room. But it's just like, I just think that this is going to be like an extremely hot April for him. And, you know, pitchers are going to find that hole wherever it is in his swing and exploit it during the hot summer months. And it's going to get a little bit sketchy, even though I believe in him long term. That's why I don't have him on any of my redraft leagues. I don't typically try to go for like the younger bats because I'm afraid of major league pitchers and their ability to find holes at some point. So I think this guy on a hot streak, it's totally fun, but yeah, I think this what's happening with Bush.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up the process of how pitchers adapt and hitters have to adapt back. And there's going to be a whole, like there will be a time where people figure out something that doesn't work for Michael Bush. I think that Lauren actually brought up one of the things that maybe pitchers were trying to exploit and they're finding now that they can't, which is this question of fastballs, right? Like he was struggling against the fastball when he was playing for the Dodgers last year. And so pitchers were probably like, oh yeah, let's see what we can do. Pushing one by him here. And they're finding that they cannot do that. That Mike, whatever hole he had there before, Michael Bush has closed that hole. He's probably about to see a ton of breaking stuff. He's about to see stuff in some of those spots of the zone where he's got some cold streaks. And I think, Shelley, you are absolutely right. There's going to be some struggles here. Lauren, I'm curious from your perspective, do you think that Michael Bush has the underlying skill set to ride out some of those struggles? He's definitely going to get the playing time, right? Like the Cubs do have a backup first base option in Cody Bellinger, but their backup center field options after that don't get very good, right? Like they'd have to go back to playing Mike Tauchman there, who's passable at center, but like you don't want Mike Tauchman in the lineup every day. You want him in there as your fourth outfielder, not as an everyday player. Is Bush going to have the ability to adapt when the league adapts to him?
I mean, I think that he can. I mean, you know, he's got great contact rates, above average contact rates. He doesn't chase out of the zone. So you're not, you know, he's not just kind of up there kind of swinging at pitches willy-nilly. Like I said, I mean, he's got kind of those you know, StatCast power metrics. And, you know, looking at some of his, AAA last season, he hit, you know, 27 home runs. And the year before he hit 21 homers. I think you're looking at probably, you know, maybe a 20, maybe 25 home run guy. But, you know, his plate discipline is good. He's striking out a little bit more than normal right now, but he's walking at a 13% clip. And I think that also speaks to, like I said, he's not chasing. So he's not all over the place. There is, you know, there's some patience there and a decent eye. And I think that that's one of the things that you see, you know, one of the first things that you see fall once guys come up, and that hasn't been the case with him. And sure, I think adjustment pitchers will adjust, but I think that he's got a strong enough a base there to hold his own for a little bit and see, you know, what we really have with Michael Bush.
You know, Lauren brings up some of Michael Bush's AAA stats, and I'm so glad you did. one of the things that actually, I don't have a ton of Michael Bush this year. It's not because I didn't believe in the trade. It's not because I don't believe in the player. It's because I am skeptical of dudes who come out of the PCL. They come out of the PCL and they rake. I mean, I'm looking at you, Gavin Lux, and we think that they are going to be the next big thing from a power perspective, and they're just not. Michael Bush actually seems to be the exception to that rule to me, not the rule there. I was real worried that the Cubs were about to get Edwin Rios again here by the Dodgers. Like, hey, we got a guy who had a bunch of home runs in AAA, and then boom, nothing when he gets to MLB. Shelley, you watch prospects closer than almost anyone I know. How do you evaluate guys coming out of the PCL?
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult task. I will say that he spent most of his time in Oklahoma City versus like the PCL part of the PCL. There's a Albuquerque. Whole lot of PCL there. So it's a tad bit different. Gavin Lux is a whole total different ball of wax, and I was totally wrong on him. But with Bush, I'm honestly, if I'm just straight being honest, I am really encouraged about what I've seen with him so far in the Cup with the Cubs. And I'm wondering if during his time with the Dodgers, especially last year, he played second base, he played third base, he played outfield, because they were trying to figure out a place to put him because they know he could hit. And that is what he's currently doing right now. But he's also playing one position. He's playing first base. He can concentrate on playing first base and then hit, which is what he has always done. So, I mean, while maybe I do think that he's a dude, but I also think that he's a dude on a hot streak. So can I be on a fence there? He's a dude on the hot streak.
I think you can. And I think it's totally fair, particularly for these rookie players who they're going to have some ins and outs, right? Like, Christopher Morel is one of my favorite players. You got to be able to ride out a streak with Christopher Morel, and you got to be willing to ride out when the streak goes bad because he's kind of a streaky player. In fact, a fun fact before we head to rebuttals, the list of Cubs players who have had home runs in 5 games in a row is elite and fun. And I just want to share it before we head to rebuttals. Sammy Sosa in 1998, Ryan Sandberg in 1989, Hack Wilson, your MLB all-time RBI leader in 1928, and Christopher Morel, who did it in 2023 before Michael Bush did it in 2024. That is some elite company for a couple of Cubs corner infield guys that are really young. And if Michael Bush and Christopher Morel are the next coming of Ryan Sandberg, Sammy Sosa, or Hack Wilson, Cubs fans are in for a treat. Lauren, we're going to start the rebuttals with you.
Well, that's, I think, very high praise. I don't know if I, you know, like talking about Michael Bush and, you know, saying that he's a dude. If he's up there with those other dudes, that's dude-tastic. But I don't know. He's not that high. But I do think, you know, like kind of what I touched on earlier, I think that some of those underlying metrics are there where I don't think that, you know, he's going to kind of falter. And I just think that there's a good base there, and he can be a strong player moving forward.
Dude-tastic is totally something that's going to become part of the lexicon of this show. Shelley, your 1-minute rebuttal.
Yeah, Michael Bush, yeah, he can hit. Don't expect him to continuously hit at least one home run every single game. You know, if you're in a shallower league, like a 10-team or 12-team, yeah, sure, ride the hot hand. If you're a 15, and you know, he's happens to be on your wire or something, it's not going to last. There is going to be like this massive cold streak where he goes 0-for-4 with like 3 strikeouts in a game. And then it just kind of like snowballs from there. So I'm glad to see that he's hitting, but we need to maybe slow our roll just a little bit.
Would you try and sell high on him if you had him kind of in shallower leagues?
Definitely. Yeah.
All right, so definitely not part of the debate anymore, but I'm curious, what do you think would be some good trade returns for both of you? We'll just make this kind of a quick hitter. If you had Michael Bush on a team, you were trying to sell high on Michael Bush right now. Shelley, who is somebody you might try to trade for with Michael Bush?
Ooh, I don't know. Maybe someone who is kind of like underperforming. What about Cody Bellinger? Like, could you do that? Could you flip a Cub for a Cub?
I think you absolutely could. And Cody Bellinger's a dude who's been like a 2020 guy more times than not. I bet the Cody Bellinger owner is nervous right now that they have bad Cody Bellinger again. And you could probably flip Cody Bellinger for Michael Bush.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Lauren, who would you try to flip Michael Bush for if you had him?
I don't know. I like the Bellinger. I'm also really bad at on the spot questions, but I'm going to try and come up with someone. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I think I might. I'm just kind of glancing at a list of guys right now. I'm going to actually try to flip Michael Bush for an arm, because I think the pitching is one of those situations at this moment in time that is fraught and hazardous. But if you could take somebody who you really believed in a starting rotation position, and maybe, I don't know, like, could you turn Michael Bush into, let me see here, turn Michael Bush into Aaron Civale? You probably could pretty easily if you want to, if you believed in Aaron Civale. Mm-hmm. What about aiming a little higher? I just closed down my list of pitcher ranks, so this is gonna take a second. That's okay. We can edit parts of this.
What about Jordan Montgomery, who we have not seen so far? Can you do
that's a Oh, I like that. That's a good one. What about Blake Snell, who has struggled in his first couple of starts in San Francisco, who is probably not going to struggle eventually because this is basically spring training for Blake Snell? Could you turn Michael Bush's hot start into last year's NL Cy Young Award winner?
I think that's how you phrase that to the other, you know, fantasy manager, right?
Yeah. I love this. I think those are all interesting potential options. We are going to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we're going to talk about another dude named Mike, but first, a quick break. All right, we are back, and Lauren is going to moderate our next debate. It is about a different Mike, and Lauren, bring us into our next debate.
It is a different Mike. It is about an older Mike. It is Mike Trout, who looks like he is in vintage form. He's hitting bombs, stealing bags. Do you all think that he is in vintage form, or do you think it's kind of more of a flash in the pan. Sarah, what do you think?
I'm so here for the resurgence of Mike Trout, and I love it, and I believe in all of it, and I refuse to pour any cold water on what is happening with Mike Trout right now. Listen, y'all, if you go look, if you're one of those people like me and you like to like scroll through old baseball reference pages or Fangraphs pages, look at historical data and like kind of do war comparisons and those types of things, Mike Trout's similarity scores are Mickey Mantle and like Joe DiMaggio and like dudes we all like know in our heads but have never seen with our own eyes. It is an absolute travesty that the best baseball player of our generation is in playing for the Los Angeles Angels and going to be for life, where hardly anyone will see or appreciate the magic and the exceptionalism that is Mike Trout. And for I don't even know how many years, a decade, he has been a perennial first rounder in our game, in our fantasy baseball game, because the man hits for average and he runs and he hits for power and he does all the things that we want fantasy baseball players to do. And the last couple of seasons, due to injuries and aging and all of the things that happen when, as you get older, as I'm getting older, like we all know, like you wake up and you're like, things hurt that I didn't know existed before. Mike Trout fell this year to like the fifth round. And Mike Trout just looks like he wants to remind all of us that he's still a second or first round guy. We just forgot about it. I think it's partially Mike Trout having a strong start to the season. I think it's partially having a new manager who's willing to be like, hey, no, Mike, you can run a little bit if you want to. Like, I don't think he's going to steal 40 bases. He might not even steal 20. But if Mike Trout gives you 15 stolen bases and is Mike Trout the rest of the time, and he plays 120 games this season, that dude is going to put up production numbers that are third or fourth round production numbers, and you got him in the fifth or sixth. Congratulations to every single person who drafted Mike Trout. You got an all-time gamer, and I am here to watch him, his resurgence.
Shelley, what do you think?
I really hate to be the negative Nancy here, especially when it comes to Trout. I mean, he's definitely going to be, a first ballot Hall of Famer. He is amazing. But it's like he's honestly, he's like, it looks like he's playing the role of Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout currently this year. You know, he has hit 7 home runs, 2 stolen bases, hitting .290. Again, it's really hard to be a negative Nancy on a guy that is this good, but he has had trouble staying healthy the last couple of years. Last year, he was limited to 82 games. The year before that, 119. And the year before that, which was right after COVID in 2021, 36 games. So as much as I love him, and I love to see him just hit tanks all over the field, like it just, oh, it just, whenever I pull up, you know, MLB Network and I'm watching where they replay the games, I love seeing Mike Trout hit tanks. We all know that it's going to sadly end at some point this year. I hate playing this part, but it's going to, like, we've seen it for the last couple years. And it's like, once you start having these little nicks, these little knacks, like all these little things, it kind of keeps coming up. There will be a time where Mike Trout will be on the IL, I do believe. Enjoy it while you got it, man. Like Sarah said, like PBC's going the 5th, 6th round. God bless you for drafting him. Like, I didn't have the courage to. I really didn't. And I'm having regrets right now. But, you know, maybe in July, I'm not going to have regrets because he's going to be, you know, on the IL with, you know, a calf injury or something like that. So it's like, enjoy it, but it's not going to last. It's really not. I hate to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, right? It's that injury risk with Mike Trout, where, you know, he cracked 119 games, and that is the most he played since 2020. And we know that he's going to go down. And I don't know, are you not, like, how concerned are you, Sarah? Do you not think that that's, like, I understand that Mike Trout is, you know, on a kind of a per game basis is awesome, right? And I think that when you draft him, you know, I guess that's what you're getting, right? You're not going to get a full season. You're maybe going to get 130 games. You may even get less, you know, this season. So I mean, I don't know. Are you not concerned? Are you just, you know, just kind of rolling with it? And you understand that you are getting, it's what that per game with him.
So I want to be really clear. I did not draft Mike Trout anywhere this season, but, I believe in what he's doing, and I believe in what he's doing relative to ADP in a way where I also have the same FOMO Shelley does in terms of, like, what was I thinking at these points in the draft that I didn't take Mike Trout here, even if it's 100 games of Mike Trout, even if I only get a partial season of him, because these are the players who went around Mike Trout. Nico Horner at 55, who we just talked about, is like, wow, like, if the structural situation in Chicago has changed to the point where Nico can't steal you 50 bags and he's hitting 7th and he's no longer that run guy at the top of the lineup, I don't know, man, maybe Nico isn't the guy who should have gone right there. He went 2 picks ahead of Mike Trout. Framber Valdez, who is one of the many pitchers dealing with elbow issues right now, like, man, I wish I had Mike Trout. Emmanuel Clase, who you probably are okay with taking right around the Mike Trout line. Max Fried, you might not be, given the struggles that Fried has had to start the season. Jazz Chisholm, who also has injury concerns. O'Neill Cruz, injury concerns of his own. I mean, I'm just looking at this. I'm like, what was I thinking in the 5th and 6th round when I could have been taking Mike Trout instead of any of those dudes? And I definitely was taking Emmanuel Clase and Nico Horner instead. I feel like I should have trusted the greatness that is Mike Trout and understood that, like, I'd rather have 119 games of that than a full season of question marks with some of these other guys. And I imagine a lot of people who drafted at least Framber Valdez, Nico Horner, and Max Fried are thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I think one of the crazy things too, looking at Trout's numbers, is that he's got 7 home runs on the season, and his hard hit rate is like cut in half. It's only 36.7%, which is a little bit below league average. And he has a career rate of 46%. So, I mean, I guess you know, if you're concerned that, like, this is just a fluke, but it's like, if he's doing this with like half of his hard hit rate going, I mean, you could maybe make the case that he's going to like bomb out even more, you know, like he's going to like hit those bombs if he's doing it at a reduced hard hit rate, because his barrel rate's the same. And, you know, looking at some of those power metrics, it's just, that's the one thing that kind of stands out. And I'm very curious to see actually what that means moving forward. You know, my only concern is injury, but if he's hitting like 7 homers with his power cut in half or his hard hit rate cut in half, you know, I think that's notable.
Yeah, I agree with that. Shelly, I actually have a question for you, if you're cool with it. One of the things that stands out to me for Mike Trout during these last seasons where he's had all the injury issues, his sprint speed has stayed elite. 96th percentile, 98th percentile, 97th percentile, it's 98th percentile or 96th percentile, like all of the last 4 seasons. Normally, I look at that as an indicator of health with a guy. I look at that as an indicator of like, this guy is fast and healthy. I wonder if I should be thinking about this differently with Mike Trout, in that the sprint speed is an indicator that he's not willing to let up. And that's one of the things that keeps getting him hurt. And we should not be so excited about Mike Trout stealing bases. We should be instead cautious about the fact that Ron Washington is letting him run and we might only get 50 games of Mike Trout instead of the 119. I'm thinking about the risk of playing devil's advocate against myself. How do you feel about Mike Trout and his sprint speed?
Yeah, sprint speed is like really funny, because there are like some people who have like lower sprint speed that still steal bases, and lower sprint speed and steal bases is more of like whether you want to or not. And I don't know, maybe we're totally like flipping the script, Sarah. I just saw on Twitter, Mike Trout just stole his third base, which is, he hasn't stolen more than 2 bases since 2019. So he's up to 3 now. So I think just like Juan Washington, like he has been beloved when he was in Texas. He was beloved when he was the third base coach with Atlanta, right? I just think that maybe that's just kind of like, Ron is just like building him up. He's like, oh, Mike, you could totally take that base. You were like really, really good at running. Like, come on, you can take that base. So I think we're maybe seeing like a rejuvenated Mike Trout now that he's kind of like, quote unquote, like the guy again. So yeah, but when it comes to the sprint speed, again, I take that like with a grain of salt. And it's basically on sprint speed plus what the team is doing. Because I'm sure Nico, right, has elite sprint speed, but the Cubs are not running. The Angels are running. They ran all throughout the spring training. So I think you have to take sprint speed with a grain of salt and just kind of look at also the team context. But I think that the Angels are going to run. So yeah. I think we might have like totally like flipped the script there, Sarah.
We might have. I'm like, I don't know. Like the sprint speed might get him hurt. Shelly's like, I don't know. He might be that dude again. I'm also like, thank you, Mike Trout, for stealing a base as we're debating your stolen base and fantasy value.
Well, I mean, Ron Washington.
Please subscribe to Pitcher List.
I think, you know, Ron Washington did say, you know, he was one of the managers, you know, in the offseason that was like, we are going to be an aggressive base stealing team and we're going to be aggressive on the base paths. And you can see that with some of these players already. So I think, you know, that's, you know, to your point, Shelley, that you can have the fastest speed, but in terms of team context, if your manager's not into it, it doesn't mean anything. And I think we'll find out. And maybe we are finding out just during this show, if he's, you know, he's stolen 3 bases. And this is a team that wants to run. So they're running and that's what we're seeing. So did we miss, it's rebuttal time. Right. So Shelley, what is your rebuttal?
Well, while Mike Trout is an all-time dude, I'm still afraid that he's going to get hurt. But I mean, honestly, if you have him, I don't see how you could trade him. So just write it out, but beware. Have some guys on your bench that you can replace him with.
Beware. Sarah, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think Shelley nailed it. Like, you've always got to be worried about the injury risk, but Mike Trout is, what was Lauren's phrase earlier? Dude-tastic with a capital D. And we are all just lucky that we get to see what this man can do. I love that he has a manager that has kind of unleashed him back into the realm of, hey, let's watch Mike Trout. And if you were fortunate enough to draft him around those players I named before while I was taking Emmanuel Clase or Nico Horner instead, congratulations to you. And I hope we get one or two or maybe even more seasons of Mike Trout at his all-time healthiest doing the thing, because we may never in our lifetime see another player at that level. And I love when we get players at that level, right? Like, we are so lucky in this day and age of baseball. Got Mike Trout doing Mickey Mantle things. We got Juan Soto doing Ted Williams things. And we had to watch that with our own eyes. And it's incredible. And we're so lucky to be able to watch those things in today's game. We are going to move to our next debate, and Shelley is going to moderate this one.
Yeah, I was just kind of looking at the new Fangraphs player rater that they have over there, which if you haven't checked out, it's really great. Just having like a easy access to a player rater, it's really great. But two guys that kind of stood out to me were two guys that I were in, like, well, one definitely last year and one probably about 2 years ago. And they are totally killing this year. It's two outfielders, Taylor Ward and Tyler O'Neill. I just really want to put this out there because I really don't know how I feel about these guys. So I'm going to, you know, go with Lauren for this one. Who do you got? Taylor Ward, Tyler O'Neill, so far this season, and then who would you rather have long term?
I got Taylor Ward, and I would like to have him more long term for the season. And you kind of briefly mentioned, you know, he was a breakout bat in 2022. You know, he showed some pop and some speed. He hit 23 home runs, stole five bases, and he finished the season with a 137 WRC plus. So I was really excited then going into the 2023 season. But that season got cut short because he got hit in the face with a baseball in a very ugly incident. I don't know if you ladies caught that, but it was scary to watch and it was ugly and it cut his season short. So now looking at 2024, it looks like Ward has kind of picked up where he left off. He's popped six home runs already, and he has a 945 OPS, and he's got one stolen base on two attempts. As we talked about earlier, you know, these Angels are running. He's sitting at the kind of top third of the batting order, right behind Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon, which I think is kind of becoming a kind of sneaky good lineup. But what I love about Ward is that he has a solid plate approach. He has very strong power metrics and he has elite contact rates. He has a 90.2 zone contact rate and an 82.4% overall. So he's got a good eye. He's got the power. We saw what he could do in 2022. And I think that, you know, talking about long-term, one of the reasons why I like him over Tyler O'Neill is that, you know, Tyler O'Neill has only cracked 100 games once in his 7-year career. It's all about injury. Tyler Ward doesn't have that. So I am all about team Taylor Ward.
Yeah. So that was pretty interesting. And as you know, one of those guys that I was all in on last year, I don't have him anywhere. And then also another guy that I was in on a couple years ago, Tyler O'Neill. Sarah, what do you think about him?
I was also on the Taylor Ward train last year. I had him in a bunch of places, including Tout Wars, and I just kept waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. I am on the Tyler O'Neill train here. Tyler O'Neill is one of my most rostered players. He is, I was snatching him up everywhere I could get him. And it has as much to do with me believing in the underlying metrics for Tyler O'Neill as it does for me believing in the Cardinals' inability to evaluate their own outfielders. And I just want to recap for the people at home who don't spend as much time on Cubs Twitter and aren't as into Cardinal shade as I am. The Cardinals have let all of the following guys go for like next to nothing over the past few years. They traded Randy Arozarena to the Tampa Bay Rays for Matthew Liberatore. That's working out terribly for the Cardinals. Randy Arozarena won an ALCS MVP It was great. They traded Adelise Garcia. Designated for assignment, Adelise Garcia. The Texas Rangers picked him up for nothing. And Adelise Garcia is an absolute stud, going 2020 like it's his job, leading the Texas Rangers to a World Series ring, right? Like, you've got Patrick Wisdom, who the Cardinals let go for nothing. They DFA'd him. That is a 30 home run bat who has been playing in Chicago. And look, I get it. Like, Patrick Wisdom strikes out 40% of the time. The power is elite, though. And the Cardinals decided he wasn't worth being on their roster at all. And the last but certainly not least, and I know this is near and dear to Shelley's heart, when they had an opportunity to trade for Juan Soto, the thing that held that entire deal up was they could not imagine parting with Dylan Carlson and sending Dylan Carlson to the Nationals. Too precious to part with Dylan Carlson, sending Tyler O'Neill to Boston for nothing. I believe in the Cardinals' inability to evaluate their own outfield talent as much as I believe in Tyler O'Neill. I would just like to preemptively congratulate Tyler O'Neill on winning the ALCS MVP at some point in the near future. Tyler O'Neill is a stud, y'all. Like, the dude has Popeye arms, and he hits home runs, and he hits them loud. And if you look at his hit spray chart over the course of his career, and you map that over Fenway, you're like, ah, duh, this guy's going to hit 35 home runs, and it's going to be sick. Tyler O'Neill is also a dude who is going to thrive in Boston. The Boston media culture and the St. Louis media culture and the St. Louis baseball culture versus the Boston baseball culture is, like, very much going to feed into Tyler O'Neill. So while I agree with Shelley and I agree with Lauren that there is some injury risk with Tyler O'Neill, I think Tyler O'Neill is a dude just waiting to be unlocked. And Boston is the perfect place for him to unlock all of it. And I love it when bad things happen to the Cardinals. So I was very in on Tyler O'Neill this draft season. This is not a knock on Taylor Ward, who I believed in last year. And frankly, nothing changed about why I believed in Taylor Ward. I think Lauren is absolutely right about all the things that she said about Taylor Ward. But I believe in the circumstances around Tyler O'Neill's breakout way more, just because we have seen this movie before. And the last two times they were titled Randy Arozarena and Adelise Garcia, welcome to the club, Tyler O'Neill.
I mean, Tyler O'Neill is a baller, right? I mean, I will give you that. And right now, I mean, does he have a concussion?
No, he does not. Cleared concussion protocol, but is probably going to sit until Thursday.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Rafael Devers like ran into him for hashtag reasons, and he had to get 8 stitches in his head, and that sucked.
Yeah. I will give you kind of all of that. He is a baller. He's got the attitude. He's got the body. He's got the city. It's I think he can kind of like work his magic in Boston there. And I concede those points. Those are all fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just a question of Taylor Ward more or Tyler O'Neill. We both like both of these guys.
We do.
Shelley, go ahead with questions.
Yeah, as the resident Boston Red Sox fan, so I will be very negative Red Sox. With that defense, like, do you believe, and you, we all saw that play where he ran into Devers yesterday. So it depends on when you're listening. So on Monday of this week. Do you believe that he can stay healthy? Because, I mean, he had trouble staying healthy in St. Louis, where they weren't running amok, like doing, like, they're all trying to make the flashy play because no one honestly can catch the ball. And Tyler O'Neill seems to be kind of like, oh, I can get it. I can get it. A lot of the guys seem to be like, I can get it. I can get it. And then there's no communication. So that is why I am a little bit more on the Taylor Ward side, because I think Tyler O'Neill, because he's a baller, he's gonna, I don't know,
ball
if
out.
This is correct. Yeah, he's gonna ball out too much and find himself on, you know, with his arm in a sling or something. So, Sarah, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think he's getting stitches in his head right now because he did exactly what you described. So I don't I barely feel like I can defend this. I do think that that's a real risk. And playing the left field corner at Fenway is an adventure, right? Like, I have been nervous about this for guys who are my favorites before. Hi, Kyle Schwarber, waving at you. I'm just like, oh my God, we're going to do what? It usually works out okay. I have a lot of faith in Tyler O'Neill to feed off that city and that fan base to like stay on the field in ways he wasn't in St. Louis. And I know that's such an intangible thing to talk about, but I don't know, man, there's something weird about the St. Louis stuff and the Cardinal way. And like Ollie Marmol last year might've been the least public relations conscious manager in the history of time, just like throwing his players under the bus publicly. And then they gave him an extension. And I was just like, what is going on in Missouri? Are y'all okay? I think that's a terrible way to run anything. I think Tyler O'Neill has been, he's got a chip on his shoulder. He's kind of that dude. He's been waiting for some people to believe in him and give him a shot. Boston is that place. And if he keeps hitting bombs the way he's hitting bombs, they'll let him play a little bit of terrible defense in front of the monster as long as he's hitting bombs. And I have a hunch that things that would have pulled Tyler O'Neill off the field in St. Louis, because they had that plethora of outfielders and they needed to see what they had in Dylan Carlson one more time, is going to keep Tyler O'Neill in the lineup in Boston. So I don't think I'm a little less worried about his injury risk there. I am more worried about like actual injuries that occur because of stuff like the Devers collision and whatnot. And Alex Cora needs to get a handle on that.
Yeah. Oh, I feel so bad for like Dylan, if you're listening, sorry for all that.
I know.
Yeah. Sorry.
What did Dylan do to you?
I don't. Dylan's bad. I drafted Dylan way too early a few years ago and he wound up having a barrel rate of like 1%. It was, I'll never do that again.
Yeah. Now I really want Dylan to come on the podcast.
this is not a Dylan Carlson.
So Lauren, back to you, just a little bit of like maybe cold water on Taylor Ward. I mean, outside of Trout and maybe Rendon, I mean, who knows with Rendon, to be honest, outside of those two players and Taylor Ward, do you really think that he can reach 90 RBI? Seriously?
No, I do not. Okay. No, I think it's good that he's at the top of the lineup, but it is, we are not talking about some, you know, class A lineup here. But I think where he's hitting in the lineup is helpful. I mean, when you look at his, you know, 2022 season, right? He was able, he swung 73 RBI or runs. So that's okay. Like maybe 80, maybe, I don't know. Maybe Ron Washington can get this team going. He's got him going on the base paths. Yep. Trout is on fire. We talked about that in the last debate. Anthony Rendon is coming to practice. He's the first one there. I mean, maybe something is going on in Anaheim. And I think that, you know, Taylor Ward could benefit from it at the top of that lineup, near the top of that lineup. Sure. So yeah, I guess I changed my answer. Sure. Why not? I'll buy into that. The Ron Washington magic.
Exactly. All right. We got rebuttals. Sarah, to you.
You know, I'm looking at this Fangraphs player rater right now. And thank you, Shelley, for bringing that up. That's a great tool. If you're not using it, click on fantasy at the top and then just kind of like scroll down. And the player ranker there says the answer here is Taylor Ward. And admittedly, that's a small sample size, but it's close, right? Like Taylor Ward is the fourth best player here overall. And Tyler O'Neill is at 13. I think some of that might have to do with Tyler O'Neill having sat the last game and a half with that head injury. And hopefully it's not a concussion. It's just, some stitches and he's back, because concussions are scary business. We all saw that with Anthony Rizzo last year, who looked like he was back to vintage Rizzo and then all of a sudden couldn't hit a baseball to save his life. So hopefully there's no issue there. Assuming there's no issue there, I just have this belief in guys who have a chip on their shoulder. And Tyler O'Neill has all of the reasons to have a chip on his shoulder. And I'm not sure Taylor Ward does. Like, he was traded from the Yankees and he might be angry about that, but we should have seen that season a couple of years ago. Like, I think Tyler O'Neill is doing that right now. And when in doubt, I'm going to go with the guy with the chip on the shoulder.
Taylor Ward, dude got hit in the face with a baseball. And, you know, I mean, I haven't seen that happen to Tyler O'Neill, right? So I think he's coming back. It cut his season in half. He wants to show, you know, the organization and the world that he's not scared to be at the plate anymore. He's there. He's got his pop. He's got his speed. And dude got hit in the face with a baseball. So I, you know, he's got some moxie on that front.
I mean, to be clear, I think the lesson from this debate is that Lauren and I both really like Tyler O'Neill and Taylor Ward. And they're having breakout seasons and we're excited for it. We are going to take a quick break for our sponsors. We have two more debates on the flip side. We also have our Love It or Leave It. You will not want to miss any of it. Come back. We're back. Our next debate is about two pitchers who you probably got late in your drafts who are absolutely crushing it on that Fangraphs player radar right now. Reed Detmers and Jose Berrios lead the pack in dollars earned over the course of the season so far. Cody Bradford would have been in that conversation, but he's on the injured list at the moment. Get well soon, Cody Bradford. I think I just got him in a league on Fab. Which one would you like to roster more for the rest of the season? I'm going to moderate this debate. And Shelley, I'm going to start with you.
This one was definitely easy for me. It's definitely Jose Berrios. And about like 2 years ago, I never thought that I would be on that side because I had Detmers everywhere last year. But what Jose is doing, I think is not necessarily sustainable. I mean, he has a 105 ERA, right? That's not sustainable. But what I think that he is doing, like I've watched him in a couple games, like he seems like really dialed in. And when he really got dialed in back, 2021, when he was still with the Twins, he was really dialed in. And what something that I think Nick Pollock preaches a lot is when you see a pitcher in a groove and he is just, he's just like basically like throwing BBs and he can do nothing wrong, believe in it. And I think Jose Berrios is currently in that particular role. Like he's just dominating. And while I don't think that he is going to dominate like the entire season, I still believe in him and the Blue Jays more than the Angels. I mean, this kind of been like an Angels podcast. I didn't really realize that until now, but I do believe in Toronto more than LA. Detmers has had his up and downs, but Jose has really, he just looks like legit right now. And he, Gausman aside, I mean, even honestly, I think Berrios is the Toronto ace because Gausman is kind of doing his like up and down thing with his velocity. He'll probably, you know, get back on track, but Jose, I just think that you're going to get those wins there because I do think that the Blue Jays are a better offense than LA. That could totally flip at any point. But give me Jose, even with his like really, really awful 2022, give me the steady Eddie of Jose Berrios versus the rockiness of what Detmers could do.
It's a great point that you make about like the floor of Berrios, and like a lot of our concerns about Berrios over the year were that floor seemed to like the bottom kind of dropped out on him for a couple of years. But if that floor is back, he has been so consistent over his major league career. Lauren, tell me why you're team Detmers here.
I am team Detmers. He was a player that I was kind of picking up kind of in, you know, a lot of my drafts this season. And I'm very happy that I have him through these kind of first three starts because he's crushed it. he, you know, played Boston twice, played Baltimore. So it's not like, you know, he kind of had these kind of rollover offenses. But, you know, he's looked really, really good. He's given up a total of two earned runs in his three starts. And he's just kind of, he's killing it. He's got a league leading 40.6% strikeout rate. And, you know, his strikeout minus walk rate is fourth best in the league at 31.3. And really what's happening with him is that, you know, he's kind of he has this improved fastball that is really underpinning this fabulous season so far. He's locating it a little bit better and it's coming up with a whiff rate of 39.4% which is good. And he's throwing it more than 50% of the time. And you know, he's got a couple other pitch offerings that aren't too shabby either with three of his offerings have whiff rates above 36%. I think, you know, one of the downsides with him is his walk rate. He has a career 9.1% walk rate, and that looks to be the same so far this season. So he hasn't really improved that, but he has improved his strikeout rate over in each of the past three seasons. And, you know, I think that, you know, I really like pitchers that are kind of going into like their third big season, because they've kind of had these ups and downs. And if you show you're kind of able to improve year by year, I think that's a great thing. He just missed 150 innings last season, but he should be able to hit that this year. But, you know, it's that walk rate that will kind of, I think, you know, kind of how he'll have these kind of ups and downs throughout the season. He is a young guy. He's 24 years old. So I do expect a little bit of a roller coaster, but I'm willing to take a bet that with his improvements with his fastball and his strikeout rates, that is enough to kind of curb that, you know, 9% walk rate that he just can't seem to shake. So I'm happy to take him in terms of the upside.
It's two really interesting pitchers. And we talked about Reed Detmers a little bit last week, wondering if we were too early on him, if like the breakout was just a few years away and a bunch of people were probably out after getting him on their teams last year and not seeing the results. Shelley, you were sort of the impetus for why we talked about Reed Detmers there. So I find it interesting that you're into Jose Berrios now because of that track record and what he's doing there. I wonder, are you concerned from a team context about the Blue Jays at all? Because the Blue Jays are one of the teams that I'm watching at the moment, and I'm like, oh, maybe this is a team that I thought was going to be really good and win, and I might have been incorrect.
That's kind of fair. I watch more Blue Jays games than I care to admit. I have no idea why.
Same. They're intriguing. I like them.
Exactly. Like I have, like they have a lot of intriguing bats. They have a lot of intriguing pitchers. Like I just like, they're just fun. And then when I watch the game, I'm like, this isn't exactly what I wanted. So yes, I can totally agree with you on that. Maybe the Blue Jays bats will underperform again, because I thought that they were going to be good last year. And they weren't really. But what I like about what Jose does is, yes, he's not going to win the strikeout award. He's not going to win a Cy Young. But he's really not going to kill you. Outside of that 2022 season, excuse me, that was extremely fluky for many reasons. Just his BABIP was high. And honestly, the amount of base runners that the relievers allowed to score after he left the game was one of the highest in the league. In 2022, he just really, his ERA kind of got like a little bit kind of like bat around a bit, just kind of like by bad luck. And I don't think that we're going to see that again. Yes, we're not going to see amazing stuff, but he's in a groove right now. And he's really, honestly, I don't think that he's going to kill you ratios, which with all of at least my pitching ratios, I mean, I have a 6 ERA in Tout Wars. So I would love to have Jose Berrios in any type of league right now. So yeah, I just think that he's just going to be a guy that you could just set it and forget it. And oh, I just wish I had more of those type of pitchers, honestly, in all of my fantasy leagues.
It's a great, I wish I had more of those guys in all of my fantasy leagues too. Pitching has been a particularly tough nut to crack this season with all of the injuries. I feel like, and they weren't really predictable injuries. It was like some of the guys, it's like, oh yeah, we thought this guy might get hurt. A lot of them are like, what? So I think that has been truly hard. I wonder, Lauren, are you part of what makes Jose Berrios so interesting from a draft perspective is the sort of floor situation. You're not worried about him getting hurt. You're not worried. He's not one of these guys that you're worried is like trying to throw over their maximum all the time. He could still get hurt, but it would honestly be a little stunning to me. That's not really his game. Are you worried about that with Detmers at all? Because I think part of that whole, like what makes Detmers rocky is that he is kind of one of these guys who's willing to like throw closer to their maximum. And is that something you worry about with Detmers at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that, you know, you kind of have to worry about with all pitchers. I mean, I think that but looking kind of like at fastball velocities of, you know, I think both Barrios and Detmers, they actually have the same kind of fastball velocity. It's not like he's some sort of like major, it's not like, you know, Detmers is some sort of like major hurler, but I do think that there is, it's strange, like in drafts this season, I normally am the one who kind of drafts those floor guys, like the Barrios is, but this year for some reason, I don't know why, I just flipped it and I was like, I'm going to go with upside guys, upside arms. And I think it's something to be concerned about. And that's definitely, you know, when we look at what's been going on with pitching, it's something to be concerned about, but you know, I don't know. I just don't think he's like this, like that Detmers is this huge major mega hurler where, he's going to blow his arm out. So I guess it's always something that you should be concerned about with pitchers, but I'm not so sure that I really have that concern with Detmers as much.
No, that's fair. I think the thing that I was looking at here, and I did not specify it, so that's on me, is more that, you know, last season he was throwing his four seamer 43.2% of the time. This season he's throwing it 50.4% of the time. Like I just, that is more velocity.
Twice what you're saying. Okay.
That's more velocity per like time out that he's relying on. And you're right. Like, he's not trying to blow people away at like 100 miles an hour or anything like that. Like some of the guys we're going to talk about next, but I do just wonder if that change in pitch mix worries you at all.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it in that sense. So now I maybe, thank you, Sarah.
Sorry. I'm not trying to like make people anxious about things.
No, but I think it is a good point. And it's like now, like I, you know, when I said where I was kind of drafting all these upside arms, now I'm just like, gosh, you know, my usual, these boring set it and forget it floor guys are the guys who probably will be the ones that were like the last standing pitchers, you know, this season. But I don't know, I guess yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it like from that point of view, but I don't know. I'm hoping not. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed because I think he's an exciting arm. And like I said, I like these kind of young guys that are making strides, you know, each year.
Yeah, strides are good. Shelley, your 1 minute rebuttal for Barrios.
He's boring, but he's good. That's essentially my rebuttal. He's boring and he's good.
Could do worse than boring and good this season for sure. Yeah. Lauren, your 1 minute rebuttal for
Detmers. Detmers is a little flashier than Barrios, but he's working it. It's worked so far and he's improved his stuff. And I am very interested to see how that goes throughout the season.
Awesome. I love it. I think Shelley is moderating our last debate and then we'll wrap things up the way we always do here on this show.
Yeah, since we are on our last debate, we might as well talk closers, right? So closers on bad teams, Kyle Finnegan and Mason Miller, they're both doing great things, but kind of in different ways. Mason Miller is, you know, the pitching ninja, like he's throwing 101, 102, and, you know, he has 3 saves so far on the season. Kyle Finnegan has 6 saves on the season, and while his overall stat line isn't that great, 6 saves is 6 saves. So I just want to put it up to both you gals, kind of like who you got. I'll go with Sarah with this one.
You know, Mason Miller is one of these pitchers that I was in on because I knew what he could do with his arm. And I did not draft as much because generally I already had my closer game set by the time I got there. And I was just super worried about the team context. Like, how many games are the Oakland Athletics actually going to get to save? But from a stuff perspective, there are very few guys in baseball who can do what Mason Miller is doing. That 101 mile per hour fastball is stupid. It's totally insane. It is pitching ninja gift worthy. And it's also like, I just have to, I'm going to try to contain myself while I read these numbers. Mason Miller's strikeout rate this season is 45.5%. His walk rate is 9.1%. His K-BB is 36.4%. When you are in K minus BB territory and it starts with a three, you are really happy about whatever is going on with your closer. And Mason Miller is that dude, right? Like, people do not strike out guys at a more than 40% rate all that often. And I just think it's a shame that he's doing it for the Oakland Athletics, where no one is seeing the brilliance that is Mason Miller. The last thing I'll say here, and I, again, this Fangraphs player rater is outstanding. Nathan Miller is crushing it on this right now. He's sitting it at, oh, un momento, por favor, I just lost it because I scrolled. He's sitting at 35 overall for relief pitchers, but he's got a positive value going on there. Like, I am just really here for what Mason Miller is doing. And he is, at least at bare minimum, even with that diminished value, he's sitting right behind Carlos Estevez. He is higher than Kyle Finnegan and his six saves. So whatever value you're getting from Finnegan, it's only the saves. It's not the stuff. I believe in, this is one of those skills, not rules type of situations that they say, as they say over at Baseball HQ, draft skills, not rules. And Mason Miller has all the skills.
All right, Lauren, let's talk about Kyle.
It's true. So everything that Sarah just said, this Kyle Finnegan is the absolute opposite, right? Where he is, I think he's tied for the league with six saves, right? But it is not pretty, you know, like, I'm going to rattle off some numbers that you don't really want to hear them. He has a 21.2% strikeout rate, a 15.2% walk rate. If you do the math, that's a 6.1 strikeout minus walk rate, which is atrocious. And so I don't know how, I guess he's doing it because he has the role and that's about it. But I guess you can say, well, how longer can this guy, can Kyle Finnegan have this role? Well, I don't know. The Washington Nationals haven't removed him from the role. He's tied for the league lead in saves. So I don't really know what it takes for him to get kind of shuffled out, barring an injury. So it's a very strange thing. And I think that going into draft season, you know, Kyle Finnegan and Hunter Harvey were being drafted fairly close to each other because no one thought that Kyle Finnegan would keep his role. He has the role and he had 28 saves, I believe, like last season. Despite kind of a low run total team, like the Nationals. So I don't know, maybe we'll see Finnegan, you know, get another 25 plus saves. They're going to be 25, ugly saves, but I don't know. It's not like the Nationals can really trade Finnegan. Like, who's going to trade for him? So unless an injury happens, I think Finnegan has the role and he's shown that, you know, he almost got 30 saves last season. So you're going to get saves, but it's going to be with like a really, don't watch them and don't look at your ratios after. So I don't know. I think Finnegan has the role there. And I don't know what it would take for Washington, because they haven't at this point, to pull him.
Yeah. I have Finnegan on a couple of leagues. And in some 12 teamers, he was like my third closer. And I've missed two saves of his because his ratios have been so bad. I'm like, and then like Washington was going up against like, you know, really, really more superior teams. I'm like, oh, he's not going to get a save, but of course he did. So I've missed two of those saves. But Sarah, I just kind of like want to come to you. What about Mason Miller? He is super fun to watch, but are you not concerned that he is going to like hurt his elbow again in like a little bit?
I'm very concerned that Mason Miller is going to get hurt. I'm concerned every pitcher is going to get hurt because I think all pitching is violence and like you're not supposed to do this over and over again. Like, I have a slightly sore elbow right now from just doing some normal weightlifting and some push-ups, and I'm like, God, this must be like, I can't even imagine if I was like throwing 100 miles per hour all of the time. I'm very concerned Mason Miller is going to get hurt, and I don't think Kyle Finnegan is that good of a pitcher. The Nationals find themselves in this very weird conundrum where they've got a guy in the role who has basically earned the role on, as far as I can tell, the back of just being healthy most of the time and Davey Martinez being stubborn. I write the Playing Time Tomorrow NL East column for Baseball HQ, and as far as I can tell, the manager in that division least likely to make any change at any point in time is Davey Martinez. He's like, I think this guy's a two-hitter. And he leaves them there for like 50 games, whether they're good or not. Like, he just decides to do that, and he just does it. Hunter Harvey took the role of closer from Kyle Finnegan briefly last season and then got hurt, and Kyle Finnegan came back in the role. It's like, I don't know, man. Davey Martinez might never change that. And Lauren is absolutely right that the Nationals are not going to be, it's like they could trade Kyle Finnegan. It's just not like a David Bednar situation where you have a guy who's actually talented and can go be a middle reliever on some other team. Like, Kyle Finnegan is just the guy who happens to close for the Nationals because Davey Martinez decided to do that one day. From a job security, we'll get the saves perspective. That's right. And if you have Kyle Finnegan on your roster, you don't want to start him for exactly what Shelley said, because you're like, oh my God, this pitcher is bad. I have Hunter Harvey on a lot of rosters where he's sitting on my bench because I am just waiting for the day that the Nationals realize that Hunter Harvey is the better pitcher than Kyle Finnegan. And I'm sure I will get at least 15 saves out of this equation. Mason Miller is the better pitcher. Mason Miller is going to get saves as long as the Oakland Athletics set him up for it. He's not going to hurt you in your lineup if he's not getting saves, and I am going to keep him there until he gets hurt.
Yeah, I had Hunter Harvey in so many leagues last year just waiting for Finnegan to lose that role, and he never did. So, Lauren, do you think that he is going to? Like, I mean, Hunter Harvey has already, like, missed, like, a game or got taken out because he got hit by a comebacker or something. Do you honestly think that they're going to make a switch, or do you believe in Sarah and that, you know, their manager is so stubborn, they're just going to let Finnegan go out until, you know, push comes to shove?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Sarah, I agree with Sarah. I mean, I think this is, you know, this had happened, you know, last season, excuse me, where I think that Harvey picked up like six or seven saves because Finnegan was hurt. But it's like, yoink, you know, once Finnegan came back, he was a closer. And I just don't really know, like what I said earlier, like, what would it take for Martinez to move Kyle Finnegan if he hasn't been moved yet? You know, like, it's just, it's not pretty, but it's like, it's getting the job done, I guess. And so Martinez is just like rolling with it. I just don't know what it would take. Because this is, he's like, his numbers are horrendous. But he's still like leading the league in saves. And I don't know unless he explodes like on the field, like why, you know, we wouldn't see him out there in that role. And you can't move him, like I said, because you can't trade him. So I don't know. I think he's just there to stay, unfortunately. I mean, it's just a weird thing. Like, Mason Miller is clearly the better pitcher. And these are two teams that are just like, you know, they're not generating a lot of runs. But you can stick Mason Miller in your roster and he can be like, help you with your ratios. He can grab you saves, you know, and it's just like, he makes sense why he is out there on the mound. Kyle Finnegan does not make sense as to why he's out there on the mound, but he is. And it's like talking about the Cubs and all that stuff, like team context. This is just what the manager has decided. And Martinez is there, and Finnegan is out there. Like, he's never coming out there unless he dies. They had to like drag him off the field. And I am not advocating death for a player.
I mean, I don't even know that there's a, like, yes, I agree with everything Lauren said.
I think we're all on the same page here. And
that's facts. And Davey Martinez, man, like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Like, I love you, Cub for life, and part of the managerial crew for the 2016 Cubs World Series team. So, like, Davey Martinez can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned on that front. But, man, Hunter Harvey is the better pitcher. What are we doing? I am going to move us along to our love it or leave it, which is how we always end things here on Fantasy Feud from Pitcher List. But before we do, Lauren, remind people where they can find you and your work.
You can find me. It's pretty quick and easy. You can find me over at Fantrax, where I do a weekly risers and fallers piece. And you can also find me on Twitter, and I'm trying to be a better Twitterer. So you can find me at LK Auerbach over there.
And Lauren is a great follow. You should definitely follow her. Love it or leave it, one thing from baseball each week that we're into or over. Lauren, as our guest, you get to start.
Okay. Well, I'm going to end it on a positive note. My love it for the week is the Oakland Athletics. They overcame a 5-run deficit in the sixth inning against the Washington Nationals, where they scored 6 runs. They won the game. They ended up winning the series, and it marked the first time that the Athletics have won 3 consecutive series since 2021. And for me, as a baseball fan, I completely support this, because off the field, the Oakland Athletics is that organization is a dumpster fire. It has nothing to do with the players. It has nothing to do with the fans. It is due to, John Fisher and his decisions. And I think that it's wild that the Athletics are going to be playing 3 seasons in a minor league park in Sacramento for 3 years while John Fisher tries to buy time so he can try and secure a stadium over in Las Vegas. So I detest how this organization is run. Like I said, it has nothing to do with the players or the fans, but the fans deserve more, and the players deserve to play for a better organization. So anytime that I see something positive that happens on the field with the Oakland Athletics, I 1000% support it. And I think that everyone as a baseball fan, if you're a baseball fan, you should too.
10-10, recommend. I was at a Cubs game last year where someone showed up in a sell the team Oakland shirt, and I was just like, hey, can I get a picture and just amplify this? Because frankly, yeah, what Fisher is doing with the Athletics is terrible. And go Oakland, cheer for the underdogs.
Yeah.
Shelley, what is your love it or leave it this week?
Yeah, I just also want to say that Oakland has a better record than Houston and the same record as Seattle. So go Oakland.
Boom.
But my love it or leave it, I'm going to be negative. And if it's of course about my precious team, the Boston Red Sox, their defense makes my tummy hurt. It's awful. It was awful last year. I was hoping that, with Trevor Story being back for the entire year, it'd get a bit better. I mean, we still have Devers over there who, kind of boots the ball occasionally and makes bad throws and whatever. And, I just thought maybe Duran and Rafaela in center and, Duran left, it would be better. It's not. I mean, Story is hurt for the entire year, and we're kind of back at square one. I don't think that it's going to get better at all. I think it's just going to be just a comedy of errors every single game, seeing how they fumble the ball and will lose games. I still think that it's kind of funny that their starting pitching has a really, really good ERA, but I'm I really want to look into how many unearned runs have they let up, and it's maybe their starters maybe could have more earned runs. But anyway, Boston defense, it's awful. My tummy hurts. I just don't want to watch them anymore. So Sarah, can you pick me up?
I don't know that I'm going to pick you up today, but I do agree with you on the Red Sox defense being terrible. I also have a leave it this week. It's a negative week apparently for us here at Pitcherless Fantasy Feed. We usually do better with being optimistic, but I think it's well-deserved. Maybe it's it's a leave it, but the Netflix docuseries on this Ipe Mizuhara situation is going to be lit, y'all. And I can't wait to watch this 8-show thing that tells us more. If you read the charging documents for Ipe, this is crazy. And I highly recommend that you do, even if you're not like a legal person, and even if you're intimidated by legal documents. Like, it's one of those things where you kind of keep reading, you're like, what is going on right now? Just some highlights, and maybe not a mea culpa, but we did talk on the show about like, how could Shohei not know? Or like, is Shohei involved? I'm now on the side of like, Shohei definitely didn't know what was going on, but like, there was some crazy stuff that was going on behind the scenes here. And $16 million out of Shohei's accounts, literal threats against Shohei that are coming in on the cell phone conversations because Ipe hasn't paid yet. Notifications turned off so that Ipe could steal from Shohei, but perhaps the most incompetence award once again goes to the Los Angeles Angels, who just like took this guy at his word that he had been a translator for the Red Sox before and didn't check it, and then let him have access to the greatest baseball player of multiple generations. So the Angels let everybody down here. I hope Ipe gets all of the help that he needs, because this is truly, I mean, truly just sounds like a terrible addiction. And I hate that this is so close to baseball these days, and that you have a DraftKings sportsbook outside of Wrigley and you've got a Caesar sportsbook ad at the White Sox park, which I'm sure Shoeless Joe Jackson, were he alive, would be like, what are we even doing here, y'all? I got banned for this. It's all terrible. And also, when the Netflix docuseries comes out, we're all going to watch this, and we might do a special edition of Pitcherless Fantasy Feud just to like talk through this story, because it's crazy. It's totally absurd. And so I'm ready to leave gambling in the wake of baseball's history. And yeah, this Ipe situation is crazy. You should read the docs yourself.
You guys, you should totally do like a live stream, like event, you know, like watching and then break it down.
Have that's like a great series, idea.
Like an offshoot. Yeah, yeah.
That's a great idea. Let us know on Twitter or in the comments on Discord or anything there. If you want that live stream, it's coming. We're like 6 to 10 months away from that.
It'd be amazing.
We'll do some watch parties for it. Cause I just, this whole thing, like, it's just broken my brain. It's absolutely insane. Lauren, thank you again so much for joining us. You can find Lauren's work at Fantrax. You should follow Lauren at LK Auerbach on all of the socials. Shelly, you should follow Shelly on social, because Shelly is amazing at all things social media. And I know, despite the Red Sox making your tummy hurt, Shelly, remind people what your handle is on the socials.
You can check me out on Twitter at ShellyV_643. I try to limit my pessimistic view of the Red Sox at a minimum, but I retweet some baseball stuff there, so yeah, check me out.
Awesome. You can find me at BCB_Sarah. You can find the pod at PL Fantasy Feud. We're still relatively new, so if you like the show, leave us a 5-star review and a rating. It helps other people find it. We will be back next week helping you make all of your fantasy baseball decisions through debates. Till then.